Chapter 15. Workshop 11 was a cavernous space filled with big machines in various stages of disassembly or reassembly, and the heavy smell of oily metal. Hicks had been told he could pick up some paid shift work on the civilian side if he didn't mind manual labor, and he didn't. The shrink who'd signed him off as fit for a routine employment furlough told him his wanting to keep busy was a good sign, and he'd be interested in hearing about it afterward. The shrink's response had given Hicks pause. It made him sound like a neurotic who'd been running around inside his own head for so long that he couldn't get out. But then, prolonged periods of isolation could do that to a person. Cold sleep was supposed to ameliorate the disrupting effects caused by extreme dislocations in space and time, but it wasn't completely foolproof. Even asleep, those 3 little pounds of fatty tissue called the brain could somehow sense that long periods of time had passed, and it processed the experience in the whacked-out funhouse of the subconscious mind. Still, the shrink had okayed him for real work rather than booking him into a hobby lodge for needlepoint or bridge, so Hicks figured he knew what he was doing. According to the woman on the assignment kiosk in the nearest operations node, W11 was the big machine shop on this level. It was all loaders, construction equipment, big engine parts for spacecraft, terraformers, and large-scale life support. "It's all things they need for way stations the size of Anchor Point or bigger," she explained. "We need to keep them running at top efficiency. Sound like something you could do?" She looked at him with a glimmer of curiosity. Instantly, Hicks was back on the Sulaco with Sergeant Apone, prepping for the drop at LV-426. With Ripley saying she felt like a fifth wheel and asking, was there anything she could do? Standard military protocol was to treat all civilians like the highest-ranking officers, but Hicks knew Apone had been strongly tempted to tell Snow White to get the hell out of everyone's way. Instead, he removed the cigar from his mouth and said, "I don't know. Is there anything you can do?" Hicks had figured she'd back down, but instead of slinking off in embarrassment, Ripley told him she could drive a loader. "I've got a Class 2 rating." Then she showed him it wasn't an empty boast by expertly picking up a crate of weapons. "Where do you want it?" she'd asked with a smile, almost glamorous amid all the heavy machinery. Apone had looked from her to Hicks and back again before bursting into hearty, good-natured laughter. The memory vanished, and Hicks realized the woman at the kiosk was still waiting for an answer. He tapped the edge of his flexi against the tablet on the counter to accept the job, and told her the same thing Ripley had said to him later on, after Apone wasn't around to be impressed. "I can handle myself." The map on Hicks's flexi had made finding the workshop easy enough. The schematic for the workshop itself, however, was less helpful, as it couldn't convey how much the interior landscape shifted as machinery came in for maintenance and repair. Worse, the lighting was terrible. Anchor Point was pretty stingy with the candle power. It was standard practice on the larger space stations, but Hicks had never liked it, especially in a place like this. It was like trying to find his way around shadowy rock formations in a canyon at nightfall. He made his way through the clusters of machinery and finally found a workstation surrounded by piles of metal components, bits of framework, and machines in various stages of assembly. A small, round housekeeping bot was scrubbing at grease stains on the floor. Pink foam bubbled up from its brushes as it spun around and around. The spiral design on the bot's flat surface was too scratched and faded to be even vaguely hypnotic. "You Hicks?" A husky man with dark brown skin and a full head of short dreads, some of them beaded, peered at him from a perch on a tall stool at the workbench. There was a rack of high-intensity light hanging just above his head. Only one was turned up to full power, its beam aimed directly at the complicated jumble of hardware in his hands. Various other parts were scattered over the ersatz wood surface, along with wires, bits of circuit boards, and other things Hicks had no clue about. Off to one side was an angle-poise magnifier lamp with extra lenses. It looked like a genuine antique.
"None other," Hicks said, glancing at his flexi. "If you're Walker, I'm here on a temporary duty assignment."
The man nodded.
"Glad you didn't get lost. I can really use you."
Under his nimble fingers, the jumble he was holding turned into a joystick controller. Walker touched a fingertip to it, and Hicks heard the harsh metallic growl of a power loader coming to life behind him. He stepped to one side as it lumbered forward, thumping to a heavy-footed stop 15 centimeters to Walker's right. Exactly 15 centimeters. Hicks knew no less and no more. Engineers like Walker lived and breathed precision. "We got some throwbacks around here that have to have a joystick," Walker said. "Won't use voice commands or gestures or a touchpad. Won't even try to learn." He slid off the stool and gestured for Hicks to follow him.
"So tell me, you ever blow out the hydraulic lines on a force feedback system?"
"No," Hicks said. "Never too late to learn," Walker assured him, "and it's a lot more fun than it sounds." Hicks followed him past several large wire bins filled with metal pipes. The odor of oily metal became stronger and acquired a surprising undertone of citrus.
"If you smell lemons, you're not going crazy," Walker told him.
"You guys use lemon oil?"
"We use whatever works. Sometimes it's coconut," Walker chuckled. "We tried baby oil, but we kept running out of babies."
He glanced over his shoulder at Hicks.
"Heard that one, huh?"
Hicks nodded.
"In boot camp?" "Well, I wasn't kidding about the lemon and coconut," Walker said, sounding slightly disappointed. "Ever since they put olfactory in the AIs, it's been hardware potpourri around here."
"Maybe it's so AIs can tell the difference between what smells and what stinks," Hicks said. Walker surprised him by bursting into hearty laughter.
"Damn, that's a good one," he said. "I gotta remember it."
Then he looked curiously at his new charge.
"You're off the mystery ship, right?"
The sudden shift gave Hicks mental whiplash.
"The Sulaco's a mystery ship?" he said, surprised. "What's the mystery?" "That's what we'd all like to know," Walker said,
as they went down a short flight of stairs to the hydraulics area. He had to raise his voice now to make himself heard as the sound of pressurized liquid rushing through all the channels became louder.
"Whole thing's triple classified, but there's a rumor that two Marines and the deck crew never came out." "Don't ask me. I was still in cold storage."
Hicks looked around, hoping Walker would take the hint that he felt more like working than talking. But the man only stood there with his arms folded, staring at him.
"Hey, I'm just a jarhead," Hicks added finally. "And nobody tells jarheads nothing. Hell, if I got hit on the head and forgot my own name, they wouldn't tell me that either."
Walker's smile was perfunctory. Hicks couldn't blame him. Civilians didn't realize that the brass treated jarheads like mushrooms. They kept them in the dark and fed them shit.
"So this force feedback system you want blown out?" Hicks said. "Do I need an air compressor or do I just take a deep breath?"
Walker laughed again as he led Hicks to the far end of the platform.
"I gotta remember that one, too."